There's no two, there's only one?
No, it doesn't have it.
Let's put another one down as a backup if we can, because I've already had bad experience. And my energies are limited, what can I tell you? Everyone wants me to go here, there, and give the Shayurim lectures. If anyone wants to come, come to Gris, bring 1,000 people, we're going to the auditorium, and we'll enjoy each other. All right, today, first of all, we're recording, yeah, we're okay. I left the heat on. Let me adjust the heat. This should be good. Shouldn't be too hot, too cold. Okay, today is December 30th, 2013. It's a beautiful Monday morning in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. I say hello to all those sitting in front of me and hello to all those listening via the website. Last week, this course began a year and a half ago. It's the history of Torah in modern times, or history of Torah in the United States, I should say. The history of Torah in modern times, I gave about 13 years ago. We spent about 4 years on. It'll take us about 4 years to do the history of Torah in the United States. The lectures, by the way, from a year and a half ago are being written up and they appear on Rabbi Gil's student's blog. Does anyone know the name? The new name? Mentioned the name. Torah Musings. It used to be called Hihurim, but it appears there and he already put up two Sheyurim and it's Nishkashi. Did a good job. Now, we've reached the point of World War II. And it's interesting, it's fitting to yesterday's shir as well with Eruv and Manhattan and Reb Aaron Cutler and Reb Moshe Feinstein. There's no question that America shifted gears after World War II. That the immigrants came and found absolutely nothing and built it all, as Artscroll describes it, that has no basis in reality. But there was a infrastructure, but there's no question that the immigrants who came totally changed, invigorated, empowered the infrastructure. And of course, there's no more famous name than Reb Aaron Cutler, who we'll come to in a few weeks and spend a lot of time on him. See, the Hasidic Rebbeim had influence, but only within their own courts. You don't see the Kloisenberg Rebbe, and you don't see the Sofner Rebbe, you don't see the Lubavitch is a little bit different. But all the Rebbeim, the Bavav Rebbe, the influence was limited. Reb Aaron Cutler came, and his influence is felt right in this classroom. As I said yesterday, we're probably only sitting here because of Reb Aaron Cutler. YU never had any ideas about Kol Olim, never dreamt about Kol Olim. I don't want to go into details now. I did it a little bit yesterday. You can pick it up on the website. There was a kollel in YU after World War II, but that kollel was a Rachmanis kollel, a Gemilat Chesed kollel. The greenhorns from Europe who survived and didn't yet have jobs in America, Rabbi Belkin organized a kollel for them until they could find their way. And I remember that kollel like yesterday. I used to peek in on it. The building in which they studied no longer exists. It was long since knocked down. It was a little building built by American money after World War II for students to study in. And YU built a number of buildings with grants from Washington. And this was one of the buildings, and in the building there was a kollel, and these were big Yudapeyesh Talmidei Chachamim, and Dr. Belkin wanted them to adjust to America, and Dr. Belkin was a big guy mil chesed. And there was a kollel, but that was not a kollel with any intent, with any purpose, with any future. Reb Aaron came, and Lakewood caught on the concept of Gottleitn Torah, not just turning out rabbis. The 20s, the 30s, the 40s, what did YU dream about? Turning out rabbis, practical rabbis, public rabbis, pulpit rabbis. But then Reb Aaron, Teira Lishma, Litva, Litish, And that affected YU, and we couldn't even figure out yesterday how many Kollelim there are in New York. The boys were telling me some said 3 Kollelim, some said 4 Kollelim. I can only testify that here in Israel there's 1 Kollel, Gris. But this all goes back to Rabarin. Now, that's one side of the coin. The flip side of the coin is that in World War II, I don't say there wasn't rivalry. Teira Vadas, Yeshivas Yitzchok Chanan, Chaim Berlin is coming on the map, Nei Yisrael is coming on the map, Telz already is coming on the map, 41, but there was no enmity. It wasn't like today. Today I had the experience of walking to the Kotel on a Friday night a number of years ago, so I picked up a grandfather and a grandson. Grandfather asked me directions, how to get to the Kotel. So we started speaking. It turned out that the grandfather's son-in-law was a Talmud of mine, came into BMT in the early 70s, a cannibal, a monkey who jumped off the tree. And Baruch Hashem, with these 10 fingers, by the time he left my hands, he was a Ben Torah. And this is his father-in-law. And the kid is his nephew. And they're from Pittsburgh. And we're walking to the Kollel, and this kid, a little kid, was just bar mitzvah. He had a black hat on that was 5 times his size. A little head with a tremendous black hat that probably ran $200. What is it, a Borsellino with the things I don't even know. That's like meshuggah to spend $200 on a hat. I can get you a nice cap, have it in my office for 30 shekel in the center of Jerusalem. Get you a baseball cap in Yerushalayim for 5 shekel week. My Yerushalayim. But all right. And this kid from Pittsburgh, and the father, we get to talking, and the kid hears, I teach for YU. This is a 13-year-old kid who doesn't know how to brush his teeth properly. Had the kid heard I taught in a Buddhist temple, he would have been happier. The kid looked at modern Orthodox. I am as far from modern Orthodoxy as Mao Zedong is from sitting in front of me right now. That's a different story. Don't ever call me modern Orthodox. Call me a Torah Jew in Western context. There's a big difference between that and modern Orthodoxy. But this poor kid, he heard the word YU. See, this didn't exist before World War II. And how does this come about? Okay, so now I got involved, and today is Pashit, a Sheyur, Pshuto Kamashma'o, a very important Sheyur. Tell me, are we allowed to study general subjects? And this is a tremendous question. We have to learn Torah. We have to learn Torah day and night. Day and night. What does it mean, day and night? How do you have time to do anything else? How do you have time to do panasa? How do you have time to get a career? How do you have time to go to high school? How do you have time to go to college? So I showed you last week the Rambam. I don't want to repeat it now. Hilchot Yesod de Torah, Perek Hey, Halacha Yud Gimel, where the Rambam says that Misha, when your stomach is filled with basar v'yayin, I just want to check, lechem v'basar. The Rambam uses the aphorism, bread and wine. The Shulchan Aruch, when the Ramah cites the Rambam, he uses basar v'yayin. You could do a whole pilpul how the what one uses lechem v'basa and one uses basa v'yayin. But be it as it may, it means when you know how to learn, when you have shas and paiskim under your thumb, then the Rambam and the Rama permit you l'tayel b'pardes. The Vilna Gaon has a very sharp comment, which has given birth to, I would say, thousands of pages have been written trying to explore the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon has a very sharp comment that neither the Rambam nor the Rama ever saw. Please sit at a desk. I have to speak with you after class. Yeah, your son did not give you a very crucial name. Did he give you the name yet?
Yeah.
Okay, because that name should be able to solve all problems. Okay. So the Vilna Gaon, the great Vilna Gaon, who knew so much secular subjects and so much secular studies, and here he says neither the Ramah nor the Rambam ever knew the Pardes, never succeeded. You're not allowed to walk in the Pardes. Please don't tell stories like this. Very sharp gra. Okay. I gave Sherman it. I'm biting my tongue. Obviously, I can try to solve the problem and give you insight, but it's not for now. Now, there's no question that the greatest individual of the 19th century who had to deal with all these problems, who came out of the ghetto, who fought tremendous battles, was Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. And we spoke about him last week. We spoke about Dayan Blumenfeld. We spoke about that beautiful volume, Three Generations. I want to mention that my dear Talmud Rabbi Steve Przesensky tried to correct me that one point for Mechila, Rabbi Hirsch's name was Shamshon, not Shimshon. He was even called to the Torah Shamshon. I learned this the hard way. Years ago, I gave a shiur in Queens and mentioned Rabbi Hirsch calling him Rab Shimshon. An elderly man approached me after the shiur, but gently but firmly correct me, saying that his name was Shamshon, and he should know, because that is his name as well. The elderly man was Shamshon Breuer, Rav Hirsch's great-grandson. I want to tell you that in Israel, all the Breuers that I know refer to him as Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. So I understand what happened. The German Shamshon, in other words, the German, so they took it over, Shamshon. I will stick to Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, but to be didactic and to be honest with you, the truth of the matter is his real name is Rav Shimshon Ben Rafael Hirsch. The Germans were so assimilated into general culture that they adopted a Gentile practice that you honored your father by using his name as your middle name. It's like married women, there was a custom to use their maiden name as their middle name, and it seemed the Germans had this custom. So it's really Rav Shimshon Hirsch, but everyone knows him as Rav Shimshon Rafael. In Israel, in America, I will say, believe me, the Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. What are your family? Shamshon, okay. And here in Israel, I think if they call him up to the Torah, ask him if he's gotten a Leah here, how the Gabbai called him up. But I want to make one other point. We're talking about Rav Hirsch, Rabbi Przesensky, and if you look at the Emet V'Emunah blog this week, there's a guest post by Rabbi Paul Shaviv, the headmaster of the Ramah school. Believe it or not, today is the 125th anniversary Yahrzeit of Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, or Rav Shamshon Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, today. So here we're talking about Rav Hirsch,
last night they had a big thing.
Washington Heights. But in Israel, I didn't. No one paid attention. I wouldn't have picked it up except for Rabbi Przesensky. And then when I saw the Emet V'Emunah blog, which has a very interesting article dealing with, on a very primitive level, what we spoke about last week and what we're going to be devoting the entire shiur to today. Now, when it comes to Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, this man was the father of Torah Derech Eretz. He was totally at home in German culture. Anyone who will tell you otherwise did not understand Rav Hirsch. I have to tell you, on a superficial level, Moria Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, was exactly like Rav Hirsch. The Rav was totally at home in the American environment. We can bring 100 proofs, but you see, Rav Hirsch used to quote German authors, German poets. He embraced the German culture. Mori Rebbe, the story that I write about in Washington, which Bididi Haviyavda, I don't have to tell you about a third person, the Thanksgiving Day story. It's of all the stories I've told about the Rav, I think that's the most widely quoted. But it actually happened to me. The Rav was sitting where I'm sitting here, and I can show you, Rebbe looks at his watch. And that week I told you there was a wedding Tuesday night in Boston, so the Rev came in on Wednesday, not on Tuesday, you follow? So here we finished Shear Wednesday, he came in, he flew in, Shear was 1 o'clock, we finished Shear 3 o'clock, 3:15, whatever, and the Rev looks at his watch, tomorrow the Shear will be 9 o'clock! 9 o'clock in America, who's awake at 9 o'clock? And the Rav, will you be here? And I already was a friend of the Rav. I wasn't, a friend. I wasn't so frightened yet. So it's like my second or third or fourth year with the Rav. So I said, Rebbe, why so early? And the Rav looks at me and he says, Arnold, you don't know what tomorrow is. He knew who he was dealing with. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving Day. And we promised my sister will be at her house at 2 o'clock. I have to make the 12 o'clock plane. Shear is 9 to 11. And he celebrated Thanksgiving Day. But it was much deeper than that. That's only a superficial statement. The Rav, Harvard, Princeton, Ivy League, America, knowledge, medical research, college for women. He was part of that New England scene. He was a Brahmin. If you know what that word means in the Webster Unabridged, look at the word Brahmin. Forget about India. He was a Brahmin when it came to New England. So you see, on that level, there was tremendous similarity between the Rav and Avshim Shofil Hirsch. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. All the Torah, I said at the press conference that I see is on the website now, all that Torah is applicable to both of them. But then you have a very fascinating question. Tell me, was it a bidyavad or lachatchila? And here you come to a very important question that we all face in life. For example, you'll take a Rosh Yeshiva with a proper Rebbe look, with a long patriarchal beard, with payas behind his ear, with black clothes, and you'll take a Rosh Yeshiva, and he has many children, and he has one son who wound up going to Gris Kolel, and from Gris Kolel he went to medical school, and the son is a medakdek in mitzvah, and he never misses a minyan, but he has no beard, he doesn't wear black, he's a professor in a hospital in Israel, and the father is proud of him. Tell me, is the father really proud? Is it a bidyevet or lachatchila? Nathaniel, do you understand what I'm asking? Is the father deep down feel, I messed up with this kid, he didn't become a Rosh Hashiv, he didn't become a Gon, he didn't become a Litvisha, he doesn't have a beard and payas, he doesn't dress in black, alright, v'dieved, I don't have to be ashamed, he's a Shema Torah mitzvah, he's gone through Shas 20 times, he learns daf yomi, not just daf yomi, he learns 5 dapin a day, hatan iliya shakap, he's a Gon, he's an Eloi, but he's a medical doctor. Is it a lachatchila or is it a bidyevet? Ehad nachas, it's a very delicate question. I'm throwing out a very delicate question here. And this is Rav Hirsch. What do you say? By the way, I want to tell you with the Rav, I could lecture on this topic for 22 years and totally contradict myself. And I'll be absolutely right. Because the Rav lived with a certain dialectical tension. But that's for different lectures. It's not for now. On a superficial level, I'll stand on my comparison. On a much more profound level, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. Smack my face, kick me out, send me into orbit. But that's on a more profound level. On a superficial level, I'm absolutely right. Now, was Rav Hirsch a lachatchila or a bidyevet? And this question, in my humble opinion, there is absolutely nothing to debate about, nothing to dialogue about. There's nothing to discuss, because Rav Hirsch himself wrote time and again that his viewpoint was God's viewpoint. This was the goal of a Jew. Yaftelokim liyefet, v'yishkom Ba'ahaleshem. Anything beautiful that the Gentile world has produced, we have to bring it into the tent of Torah, the tent of Shem, the tent of our people. There can be literature, there can be art, there can be music. Rav Kook, by the way, said that there was Ruach HaKodesh, and I believe it was Rembrandt he was talking about. He praised the art, people in music, what people can hear in music, classic music. That I've seen people that it's like when I'm davening Shmon Esrei, I can break into tears. They're listening to music. Good Jews, Talmidei Chachamim, they have tears coming down. Halacha, kama v'kama, science and math and psychology and the advances we have made. And Rav Hirsch, I quote him as I quoted him last week, and I can't redo my lectures on Rav Hirsch. For someone who asked me, I don't know, maybe someone corresponded with me, email, so I just want to mention that, 13 years ago, or 14 years ago, I gave a year and a half on German Orthodoxy, on German Jewry, the heart of it being on Rav Hirsch. But Rav Hirsch writes, who put us into the ghetto? This is in the 19 letters. We didn't choose to be in the ghetto. The Gentiles put us into the ghetto. And you see the man's broadness, so that anyone who questions the Rav Hirsch Shitas Lachatchila B'di'eved are falsifying Rav Hirsch's viewpoint. But what can we do? The Gedolei Israel had a tremendous problem. Rav Hirsch single-handedly brought back a modicum of Torah to German Jewry. Didn't conquer the masses, but certainly created a very firm, solid Torah in Derech Eretz. It gave birth to Rabbi Dr. Azriel Hildesheimer's rabbinic seminary. By the way, Rav Hirsch and Rav Hildesheimer were bitter opponents in approach and how to teach Yiddishkeit and how to study Shas and Paiskim. But we'll leave that for what I did 13, 14 years ago. But there's no question that he revolutionized Germany, that you had a Torah Judaism, you had popular language and orthodoxy that could thrive among the German people and as part of German culture. He did it basically single-handedly. He wrote a great deal, published a great deal, and created a world that lives on with renovation and readjustment until today. We owe it to Rav Hirsch, no two ways about it. Now, b'di'eved lachatchila, take the Gera Rebbe. Take Rav Baruch Berlebovich, Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Avraham Mordechai Alter, who are we talking about? They had a real problem. They could not conceive of Rav Hirsch being at home in German culture, being at home in the modern world. They couldn't conceive of it. It didn't fit in to their Weltanschauung. You think for a minute, what is a chassid? Who is a chassid? How does a chassid look? How does a chassid act? How does Rav Hirsch fit into this? Rav Baruch Berlebovich, we'll see shortly, his concepts of culture, Western world, either Rav Hirsch is a tzaddik or an apikoros. As the Rav taught us in Yiddish, Untvidar, right? Either, that's the Rav, the Rav used to, Untvidar, either or. You can't have both. And they, of course, started a movement that continues until today, recreating Rav Hirsch. Lachatchila, chas v'chalila. B'diavad, had no choice. Chesky, everyone was running away from Yiddishkeit quicker than you can run away from Beit Shemesh on the day they're going to have the re-elections. You understand? That everyone was running away. Germany was filled, downhill running. Rav Hirsch had no choice. B'diavad. We know that all the time. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, in my time, I used to remember, was a fellow in YU, dear, lovely fellow, edel, nice guy. Was it finished his junior year in YU? And dear, I don't remember his first name. It's not Noach dear. It's someone a little older than I am. Dear, remember the last name was an odd name. And he goes to Lakewood one summer and he sees the atmosphere of Aaron and the learning. And he wants to leave YU one more year to a bachelor's. So he goes to Rav Aaron and he asks the Rosh Yeshiva. I am telling you what the Rosh Yeshiva answered. People today will say this is impossible. Rakefet stands on it. Aid me pi aid. He heard it directly from Deer. The Rosh Yeshiva told him, mit ein yokem in vat ratavin drayaren. Eben gaitavek jetzt is mimavatel drayaren. Translation. With one more year of college, you'll save the first 3 years that you wasted. But if you leave now with only one more year to go, you wasted 3 years, you have no degree. You follow me? Now what does this tell you? The Baron's in favor of college? Of course not. But a b'diavad, when you've already wasted 3 years in YU, and you have one more year to get your bachelor's, Rav Aaron told him, finish up and get your bachelor's, which he did. I don't know what happened afterwards. He was a lovely, an edel fellow, I remember. Adin b'yivrit medivered. That battle of who Rav Hirsch was goes on until today. If you're familiar with Rav Hirsch's Gesammelte Schriften, the 9 volumes in German that have now all been translated into English, if you're familiar with Judaism Eternal, where Rav Dayan Grunfeld put out 2 volumes of selected essays with a magnificent introduction, if you're familiar with Chorev, if you're familiar with his commentary on Chumash, you will see there's no machloket. Rav Hirsch was not like the Rav. There was no dialectical tension. Rav Hirsch stood firmly in 2 worlds. Yafeh Torah im Derech Eretz. Firmly, solidly. No ifs and buts. It's easy for Rakefet to say. It's easy for those of you that have bachelors, masters, doctorates. But the Gera Rebbe I showed you last week, Shimon Schwab, this little kid who had run away from Germany to Lithuania, and I explained all that last week, what was happening with German Orthodoxy, ran to Lithuania, his parents are hacking him at China, hitting him over the head, go to university, go to college, you're raised on Torah Derech Eretz. And Rabbi Schwab is being told by his Rebbeim in Europe, Chas v'chalili, you should waste time in college. You're matured, you're a ben Torah. Only Torah. And Rav Schwab starts asking Gedolei Yisrael, and we ended off last week where he asked the Gera Rebbe, should I go to college? And the Gera Rebbe never answered his question. He finally meets the Gera Rebbe in Marienbad, and he says to the Gera Rebbe, why didn't I get an answer? And the Gera Rebbe says, there's nothing to talk about. It's, and Dein Grunfeld quotes the Gera Rebbe word by word in Yiddish. Word by word, preserves the answer. The Gera Rebbe told him, Zavadehos, it's, of course it's forbidden. But you can't say one word against the Pshumshra Ful Hirsch. While it's given, the tzaddik from Frankfurt is given a lebedik musa sefer. The tzaddik from Frankfurt was a living musa sefer. And remember, when Rav Schwab left the presence of the Gera Rebbe, he walked out, and I'm sure he walked out backwards. You don't walk out of a Rebbe front first with your back to the Rebbe. You walk out backwards from a chassidish Rebbe. The Rebbe says to him again, Gedenkst, remember, as given our Lebetik Musa Sefer. We have arrived. My dear students, we now come to one of the most famous responsum written in modern times. When you put it into historic context, who wrote it, it becomes even more amazing. And this is written by a literature and scholars, anyone who's done research, your humble servant included, everyone agrees that this was written to Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Chivala Rabbi Chad Bashkenaz B'din Mitzvat Limatari, he doesn't give the name, he doesn't give the date, but this has to be to Rabbi Shimon Schwab. And scholars accept this as a fact today. 99% certain, 99-100% certain. Seems Rabbi Shimon Schwab himself authenticated that the letter was to him. It was the same question. What should I do? My parents say you're a Yeki, the son of Yekim, and his Rebbeim say you're a Jew, Chas v'chalila, not to waste time on college. Now, this tshuva is printed in Birchat Shmuel, Chelek Rishon, and it's by Reb Baruch Ber Leibovitch, of course. It's called Birchat Shmuel because his father was Shmuel. So he honors his father, and he calls him, it calls the sefer the Birchat Shmuel, and it is Siman Chaf Zayin. Now, it is the most thorough analysis written in modern times of what Talmud Torah is all about. Who was Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibovitch? Let's just explain. Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibovitch was the Talmud Muvhak, perhaps, of Rabbi Chaim Brisker. All of you know that in Birchat Shmuel, time and again, with the greatest of their cherets, he quotes his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Adoni, Mori, and with so many titles, Zeichet Tzadik, V'Kadosh Levracha, L'Chaye Olam Haba. This is the Birchat Shmuel that when Kanoim were angry at Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and this is all explained by your great aunt Chaim, right or wrong, but I know it from family tradition, beyond the written word in the Soloveitchik heritage by Gveret Shulamit Meiselman. Does she have a doctorate? Is it Dr. Shulamit Meiselman? You don't think so. I know Dr. Gerber, and Gerber had a doctorate, that I do know. Anyway, Shulamit Meiselman, Reb Moshe's daughter, she writes about it, how people were angry at Reb Moshe. Reb Baruch Ber Leibovitch totally defended his Rebbe, but the Chilua Rechimu Meretnishta Zei Af Mein Rebbe Zun. You don't talk that way about my Rebbe's son. This is Reb Baruch Ber Leibovitch, who a guy named Rakefet writes about in the Rav, quoting Mori Rebbe Rab Soloveitchik. I also heard it with my own two ears, where the Rav at a Yotzeit Drasha in the mid-50s, very dramatic Drasha that had such an impact on my life, spoke about how he walks around in Boston so proud that kids go to Maimonides and Ochumish and Rashi, and people smack his face and say, Rabbi Soloveitchik, what are you so proud about? A kid that age in Europe knew already 5 Masechtot and knew Rashi and Tosfos and Rambam, and he got a little schnup, an American kid. He's reading Chumash and Rashi, and the Rav is excited. And the Rav gave a Meiridik Drasha, which I can't repeat now due to the time factors, but you all know that Drasha. Borei Olamotu Machrivan. And he speaks about in his youth how he spoke in learning with Gedolei Yisrael, and he stayed up all night in Geretin learning, and among the names he mentions is Reb Baruch Ber Leibovitch. So you have to understand that the Soloveitchik family and the Leibovitz family, and to a certain degree, merge and mesh. And if you want me to prove it, Reb Chaim's great-great-grandson, figure out how many generations removed, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein's son, Yitzi Lichtenstein, marries a girl whose maiden name is Grzovsky. Her father, Reb Chaim Grzebsky, only happens to be Reb Baruch Ber Leibowitz's grandson. Reb Reuven Grzebsky was Reb Baruch Ber's son-in-law. Reb Chaim was the son of Reb Reuven, and this girl is, if I'm not skipping a generation, is Reb Chaim's daughter, and Reb Chaim's daughter marries a Liechtenstein, so that the Soloveitchik and Leibowitz family merge into one physically many generations later. All right, before I begin the tshuva, I want to tell you a story, partially real, partially a figment of the Rebbe's vivid imagination. Yoni, your father solved the problem yet? I just checked with someone else who came in from America, Big Talmud Chacham. No one knows details yet. But if Reb Heschel Shechter, what I quoted yesterday and what I gave your father is correct, we know the details, okay? He's going crazy. Reb Shechter calls it a farce. He's going to call it get a farce? Not Hafkot, it's Mechachtot. I can't, again, I don't want to spend time sideways now. But we'll know next week. They're supposed to issue a public announcement. But Reb Heschel wouldn't go crazy if it was a get. You understand what I'm saying? Even a kanoi like Rakefet would have to agree. It's wonderful. The guy finally gave a get. Baruch Hashem. But it's frightening. If that is Mechachtot, it's the end of any sanctity in Judaism. Your wife can grow up one day and say, why did I marry Yoni? I thought he'd be a multimillionaire. He struggles in Israel. Fourth week of the month, I have to watch what I spend. I would have never married the bum if I knew that. You follow? She goes to Beis Din. Oh, Mechachtot. It's the end of Yiddishkeit. I'm sitting in the Beis Medrash this morning. I'm discussing with Rabbi Kami Schwartz, the Bochein of the Yeshiva, about same-sex marriages. I said, look where the heck we're at. That we're in a Beis Medrash in Yerushalayim, Yerakodesh, and we're talking about same-sex marriages. You understand? La'an hitardanu? That this is already is a topic. Partnership minyanim. There's something to discuss? Kol badat opens up a chumash. Because Yeshua Moshe b'nei Yisrael, that takes in Miriam, separate from the time we became a nation. Thank God. If the sexual tension wouldn't be in the world, none of us would get married. It's an open Medrash Rabbah. What do you want out of me? Thank God. It's an open Gemara in Yuma. It's twice in Shas. Without the sexual urge, who had children? Bani Shalom. You gotta be crazy. Get married, have children, responsibility. Be a hippie. Be a bohemian. Shem Yirachem Aleinu, where we're at. Anyway. From what I see, it was not a get. My dear students, I want to tell you a little story. Yours truly began his calling as a Rebbe in Israel in an institution called BMT in 1969 when I came in Aliyah. BMT was organized that year. There always had been a Machon Gold, but Machon Gold was shifting gears. It used to be a mixed institution, boys and girls, producing teachers mainly for Europe, South America. It now started to cater to women only, and it became much more anglicized. If you read Washington, the author of Washington very ingeniously tells two stories that capture what was happening in Machon Gold, Israeli mentality versus American mentality in the early 70s. So yours truly taught by 71. I went back to teaching full time. It's like pity was over. I taught in BMT, I taught in Gold. It was one full job for the Torah Culture Department of the Jewish Agency. All of this doesn't exist anymore outside of the Jewish Agency, not Torah Culture, not Machon Gold, not BMT. But the impact is unbelievable. So there used to be a place in town, a cafe called Atara. It was a landmark cafe that had been around from the 1930s. Politicians ate there, generals ate there, terrorists ate there, British police ate there. Menachem Begin occasionally had a cup of coffee there. And that was a nice meeting place. So one time I come in with my wife Saturday night to Atara to have a cup of coffee, nice piece of cake. It was an interesting place. And I see a BMT fellow and a Machon Gold girl there. So I say to them, wait a minute, you came to Israel to learn Torah. How do you have time to waste in a Torah? And the boy and the girl both say to me, Rebbe, we know the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch backwards and forwards by heart. Now I admit I also know the Kitzur backwards and forward by heart at one time in my life. So I give them a Bechinah and they both get 100+. I tell the girl, please remain here, I'm going to pick up your tab. And I tell the boy, you rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, hanged, brutus, depraved, degenerate, advanced, repetitious, no good bummy dog, get the hell back to BMT. I repeat, they both knew Kitzur Shulchan Aruch by heart, backwards and forwards. The girl, I give a big smile. It's not, yes, I love women more than men, take my word for it. They are much better than the male species. That's a different story, but that's not the reason. The girl, I say, the young lady, please remain. The boy, I maledict and kick him out and put him on the first bus back to the BMT base medrash. Now I can tell you what that rakefet did was absolutely, halachically, hashkafically marked 100% correct. Why? And this is Rebaruch there. What is the mitzvah to learn Torah? Look into Reish Men Vav, Shulchan Aruch, Yerideya, 1001 sources. Alright, the mitzvah to learn Torah functions on 2 levels. On 1 level, we all have to know how to observe. I saw you yesterday when I walked in to kick Rabbi Bednarz out. I'm very unhappy what happened Sunday. I'd like him to teach in a different room, and he wants me to walk in and kick him out. Otherwise, he forgets to stop teaching. Okay. So you're talking about, I don't know what you were talking about. Remember I told you yesterday, they were talking about toasting pita on Shabbos. I said, what's going on here? Driscoll out. This is, you're not yet shtutzim, as far as I know, you're not going to toast, put pita into the toast on Shabbos. So they were talking about when you put bread back on the blech, or I don't put it directly on, I put it on a pot, in other words, kli al kli, so it's not a shiler at all. But let's say you put it on the blech, on, what do you call the other thing, the blech, or, what do you call it? Kedera. But what's the Hebrew word, a plata, right? So you put it on, and you have to know, can you, can't you? It can get very hot. Eina fiacha fia, you know, bishalacha bishal. You're creating something. Ice, the whole question of ice, you have to know. Can you make ice on Shabbos? Is it no lot? Isn't it no lot? Can you open a bottle of wine? All these good dry wines come with corks that you have to pop. I mean, you know, these are, you have to understand halacha. You want to get married in Israel, you have classes for kalab, classes for chatanim. It's a beautiful system here. I give Tzohar all the credit now. They've started classes for chiloniyim, tarat mishpacha. You can never tell the influence that one mitzvah can have on a Jew. I know one woman, I tell you, I don't want to mention the name, but I actually until today remember who she is. This goes back to the 70s. They convinced her to go to mikveh the first time, before you get married. It was at a time when people didn't have premarital relations, even if you weren't religious. It wasn't the world today that we live like animals. So they convinced her to go to mikveh. And the mikveh lady was very nice to her. Out of that mikveh came a life of Shmira Torah and Mitzvah. You understand? You can never tell. You have to know the halacha. You have to understand. On that level, a man and a woman are absolutely equal. There is no difference. On that level. And they both knew the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch backwards and forwards. I couldn't say one bad word to him or to her. But there's a second level. God-looking Torah. Ga'onitin Torah. Endless exploring. That chiyuv is on a man. not on Umkwamp. That's chiyuv, it's not on. There can be many reasons why it's not important now. A woman has a different lifestyle. A woman is a mother. She raises children. She runs the house. You know, there was a time when Eshet Chayil, it's not exactly our ideal that the woman has to kvod bat hamelech penima, within the house, the basis. So the Torah didn't obligate her beyond learning what she has to know halacha lemaaseh. Can she go beyond that? Alright, that's open to discussion. I obviously come from Boston, the Rav, Maimonides, and the Rav always held that Bisman Hazel, when women go to university and women go to graduate school, women have to know as much as a man, because they have to be able to answer, they have to know the basa v'yayin, the lechem v'basa. Today, the Rav always felt there's no difference between a man and a woman. Alright, there may be a lot of truth to that, but a man is obligated to constantly learn and be the greatest Talmud Chacham he can be. And that's why I said to that young man, get the heck out of here. Back to the Beis Medrash. V'hagita bo yomam v'layla. And that's what learning is all about. As I told you more than once, I'm going through Shas now, Al HaSeder a third time. But so many mesechtet I've learned many times, and each time you learn you go deeper, and who can know it all, and who knows it all, and who's gone through all of Rav Ovadia Svarim, who's gone through all of Reb Moshe Svarim. Right now I'm going through all of Reb Menashe HaKatan Svarim. You know why? Because I want to have some fun in Gris Kollel. I want to at a certain point give a series of lectures on the world as seen by Reb Menashe HaKatan Klein. And there's fabulous material there. He was very idiosyncratic, very unique, very different than the run-of-the-mill poskim. But the learning is endless. And remember I told you the story one time when I was finishing up Shas a few years ago. So I'm sitting in the Shtiblach to the Sheminchen Mariv, and I was learning Bukharat or Menachat, whatever. And a Wayu Musmach, 10 years older than I am, what, close to 10 years older, and a Talmud Chacham, and a brilliant guy, says to me, Ani, what are you learning? Who learns that? That's not halacha lemaisa. I never held that gemara in my hand. I was ashamed to hear such words. I wanted to put a skirt on him. Follow? That's your attitude. You're no different than a woman's obligation. But this is what learning is all about. This is why it never ends. This is why we can never put it down. This is why we can never stop. Rav Ovadia, I read this weekend in one of the papers, maybe in Besheva, I don't remember already where I read it, or it could be in a general newspaper. So Rav Ovadia, every few months, would be making a Siyum Shas. So one time there was a Siyum Shas in his house that he was very happy about that Siyum Shas. So they asked him, Macha Yom Yamayim, Manishtana Halayla Hazeh? Why are you so happy about this Siyum Shas? And Rav Ovadia answered, this is Gemara he learned when he finished making Kiddush on Shabbos. And everyone got organized, and they came to the table, and all his guests and his family, and he would be learning during that time. And this is Shas that he finished, as we say in rabbinic aphorism, Ben Gafra LeGafra. The time that you get organized from Friday night, from the Shalom Aleichem, to the Eshet Chayil, to everyone washing and sitting down, and the children being quiet, and the health, the skelter should end, and the noise should quiet down. David Applebaum, Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, used to be a Ben Bayit by Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Baran had six very noisy children. So David used to tell me when they were Friday night, till they got organized, till they got quiet, finally David used to give a bang, and then the children all were quiet to listen to the father make Kiddush. But this is when Rav Ovadia went through Shas. Could you imagine what you can accomplish, Ben Gavra Le Gavra? Well, gentlemen, if Reb Baruch Belaiba, which is correct, and I have to tell you, he is absolutely correct. When do you have time to go to college? Chas v'chalila, you should even think of it. A Jew has to be a gong, the biggest gong that he can be. A Jew has to know as much as he can, each in accordance with his inborn abilities. But to go to university, to go to gymnasium, chas v'chalila, a Jew cannot spend time away from his Gemara. And this is the start of the tshuva, this is the lamdis, and wow, he is powerful. This is a litvish statement of what religious life, spirituality, striving, questing is all about. Baruch atah melech olam shekom yivra. Wow. With me? And this is writing to Rav Shimon Schwab. We're just warming up. Then he starts talking about Reb Chaim, his Rebbe. And he starts talking, there's a word he uses in rabbinic Hebrew that, let me explain it to you. He uses the word Reb Chaim's approach to methods, transliterated into Hebrew. What's Reb Chaim talking about? No, methods. Well, what's Morty? What does he mean? Methods. Time, English, methods. Schmet, what's going on here? And remember, we're talking about the Rub's grandfather. Talking about Reb Chaim Brisker. Methods, these were the maskilim. What was a cheder? Did any of you ever go to cheder? Did any of you read the memoir literature of cheder? I still went to cheder for 1 year. My parents started me in public school, the Bronx. But my mother, I gotta give credit, she always had that feeling, it has to be something Jewish. So she sent me to a private rebbe, a cheder, three kids, four kids, each one sitting in a corner, no organization, no gradation, no exams. Minzitz, Acheda, read the memoir literature. I think in Revel, the author of Revel describes Cheda, some memoir literature, what a Cheda was, haphazard, desolatory. The masculine came along, Moshe, out of a Cheda, what are we going to get? Nothing. We need modern methods, classes, grades, review, exams, papers, methods, modernity. You know what Reb Chaim had to say about methods, about modernity, about Haskalah? Ultimately, it destroys Yiddishkeit. The kid winds up knowing nothing. For millennium or more, we have studied a certain way. We have raised generations upon generations upon generations of knowledge of B'nai Torah, of people who live the Torah life. Look at it in the tshuva. Along comes methods, modernity, modern schools. And what do you have with it? Reform Judaism. The word reformers, right here, in the tshuva. Ultimately, The next generation is not even reform, but kachol chagoyim Beit Yisrael, and lo aleinu, they lose all faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all faith in continuity of the Jewish people, and they become mumarim umeshumadim. And Reb Chaim was 1,000,000% opposed to any vestige of modernity. So you're going to tell me you're going to go to gymnasium, you're going to go to university, you're going to study in a modern fashion? It's the end of Yiddishkeit, the end of Torah, the end of the Jewish people, the end of continuity. And then we come to the most famous part of the Tshuva, which I admit to playing a little bit of a role in popularizing this Tshuva and this story. It is shocking. And it happened. And Rav Baruch Berlebowitz tells the following story that he heard from Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski, Moran Reb Chaim Meiser Shlita, the Rosh Kol B'nei HaYish HaGolah. He calls him Eid Mipiyed Shehiyid Rabbeinu HaGoyin HaMiti HaTzadik Rosh Kol B'nei HaGoyin Moran Reb Chaim Meiser Shlita. What happened? Reb Chaim Meiser's friend, a Rav, doesn't mention the name, was standing by Reb Chaim in Reb Chaim's cloys in Brisk. Reb Chaim had a little shul which he learned all day, he davened in, and everyone knew this is where you came to Reb Chaim, this is where you found Reb Chaim. If the Beis Din needed him, they knew where to find him. If a woman needed him for advice, if a man needed him, if a poor person needed him, everyone knew where to find Reb Chaim. Reb Lazer Silva, in the Silva era, there's a beautiful description of Reb Chaim's cloys by Reb Lazer Silva when he comes in to meet Reb Chaim. And a young man comes in with a shaila to Reb Chaim. It's World War I. The Polish army is drafting all the available people. This boy has been drafted, but he can get out of the army if he takes a position that's been offered to him in the American consul in, I believe it was Warsaw, it must be the American embassy there. What's the problem? That if he takes that position, he has to work on Shabbos, answer the telephone, has to type letters, but he will not have to serve in the army. Reb Chaim tells him immediately, take the position in the council. Pikuach nefesh docha chilul Shabbos. And if you can save your life and not be on the battlefield, and you have to remember in World War I, they moved 1 inch forward, thousands were killed. 1 inch backward, thousands were killed. You can take yourself out of a place of danger, be machalul Shabbos. Fine. That was the psak. A few hours later, another kid comes in, Rebbe Chabashailitzafreg, and Rebbe, I have a question to ask. I just was drafted into the Polish army, but I've also been accepted into gymnasium. And if I go to gymnasium, the army will not touch me until after I graduate, which is 5 years from now. And Reb Chaim told him, go into the Polish army, go on the battlefield, chas v'chalila, that you should go into gymnasium. And the Rav was shaking. He said to Reb Chaim, when the kid walked out, Rebbe Chil Shafen, I want to understand what you're paskin. For the first young man, you paskin that he can take a job and be mechalel Shabbos and do every sin under the sun to save himself from the army. And the second young man who would have no problem with Shabbos and no problem with Kashrut and would be a Shema Torah mitzvah, but he would go to gymnasium. You told him, go to the battlefield and risk your life. Chas v'chalila, you should go to gymnasium. And Reb Chaim answered, what's the shaila? Chilul Shabbos, pikuach nefesh is daicha. To go to gymnasium, to be oved avodah zarah, to learn about El Elilim, to see that type of lifestyle, to read textbooks of people who mock and decry religion, to live in a country where Obama is president and the New York Times dances on the graves of those who still want to live according to the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach? Chas v'chalila. Put your life in danger, but don't become an Oved Avoda Zara. And that's what Reb Chaim paskened. Wow. Some story. And just think, this is Reb Chaim, the grandfather of Mori Rebbe. Fascinating. Thwarting. Challenging. How do you deal with it? Right. That's for a different time in a different era. 22 years I spent on the Rav. But what a story. And now, these are the famous words of Rav Elchanan Wasserman. And I'll tell you an interesting story in my own teaching life. Rav Elchanan said, not Rav Elchanan, Rav Baruch Ben Leibowitz says, there is no doubt that Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch, your rabbi, the man who saved German Orthodoxy, and he gives him all the titles, Hatzadik, no question about it, he only did it b'diavad. This is not a lachatchila. He had no choice. Germany was going under. People were totally assimilated. He had no choice, but it's only a b'diavad, not a lachatchila. Now times are different. I'm quoting from the Tshuva. Thank God that among the German Jews there is now a new spirit, there is now a new feeling, and they're searching for the real, true Torah. Ha'emet al pi ha-Torah ha-Kadosha. And I want you to know, chas v'chalila, that you should go to college. And when I hear people talk about learning, that the whole reason we learn is only l'bi amachshir, k'day she'yel yirei shamayim, k'day that we should know how to live as Jews, only aznayim shekach shamot. Chas v'chalila, it breaks our ears to hear such stupidity. Torah is a mitzvah al etzem limuda v'shinuta shekol ha-Torah kula. You have to know everything. It has nothing to do with halacha l'maisa. You can know the kitzur shulchan aruch, but that does not exempt you from learning day and night. And a father has an obligation to see that his son be the biggest goon he possibly can be. And I can tell you what happened to me. One of my initial culture shocks among many when I started teaching in Michlala, 71. So I started teaching, I was in the Israeli program before I was divided half and half. And here I'm coming into the Israeli program, a total American, my whole background is YU. And I mentioned this tshuva. And I said, but it's a misrepresentation of Rav Hirsch. And there were some girls in Michlala, you don't have that element there today because they put the Michlala in the Cherem in 74, I think it was. But there was an element of Beis Yaakov girls there. And they called me aside after class, you're not allowed to speak that way. How can you say that Rav Baruch Ben Leibowitz made a mistake? If he says Rav Hirsch was a b'dieved, and that Chas v'chalila we should follow, then he's absolutely right. And it opened a new world to me. That was one of the culture shocks I had. Later on, when I would address audiences where I knew there were Haredim, I would say, I know that according to the Haredi outlook, you cannot accept this, but there is another viewpoint, etc., etc. But This is the tshuva of Rav Baruch Be'a. And he, at the very end, to make sure that you understand him, this is something you will never see. In other words, generally they sum up the tshuva within the tshuva, but here he goes out of his way. When he finishes the tshuva, he wants to be sure you understand him clearly, that even if you didn't understand all the lambda not, but you got the point. And at the end he says, our children have to be Ga'onei V'Chachmei Torah. This is the obligation. Gymnasiums and universities are 100% forbidden. Umori Rebbe B'Shaka Milchama Lohi Tiafilu B'Inyan Pikuach Nefesh Ti'al Yedei Zedoche Nefesh Mi'Yisrael Ve'ein Mitrapim B'Eitzei Asherah. And you don't heal someone with trees that are devoted to idol worship. You're not allowed to have hana from idolatrous matters. And then at the end he says, Halavai, we should go with the new spirit, and German Orthodoxy should return Belev Nefesh Unrapeh et Boteh HaMidrashot Shenisrafu Al Yedei HaHaskalah, and we should re-enhance, we should recharge, we should rebuild the Boteh Medrash that had been destroyed by the Enlightenment. And B'Zchut Zeh Yirachem Hashem Yitbarach Aleinu V'yigbah Yisrael al yedei sheyisha'aved levavenu el haTorah. God will have mercy on us, and the Jewish people will be saved and strengthened because they will intensify their commitment to Torah Hashem Tamima. And this is the tshuva of the Birchat Shmuel, Talmud Mufak of Rav Chaim Briska, father-in-law of Rav Reuven Gazovsky of Beit Medrash Elyon of Torah Vedas in the United States, father-in-law of Rav Reuven Gazovsky, who saved Rav Aaron Cutler for Torah. Do you know what I'm talking about? Rav Aaron, we spoke about it many times. This is why they put Rav Nesson Kamenetsky, or one of the reasons why South Fallsburg put Rav Nesson Kamenetsky into Cherem, because he tells the stories about Rav Aaron that Ani Rothkopf didn't have to have anyone tell him. I told Rav Nesson all your stories I heard when I learned in Lakeland. So I know they're true. I heard it in 53. I heard it a lifetime ago. But Rav Aaron, at that time the revolution was so strong everyone fell by the wayside. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was the only kid in his family who remained from. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was the only kid in his family who remained from. Rav Aaron Cutler had one sister. His sister Malka Cutler was a communist, was at the University of Moscow, was conquering the world, I believe in mathematics, could be physics, you can correct me. She pleaded with her brother, younger brother, come to the University of Moscow. The Altov Slabodka didn't show him the letters. It's the whole problem that we've raised time and again. Should a Rebbe censor letters of his Talmidim? How would you feel if a Rebbe censored letters you were getting? That's an interesting question. I can only tell you I would never censor a letter, but I'm living in my world. Could be need, I don't know. I don't know. The Altov Slabodka did it a number of times and it boomeranged. What was the most famous boomerang? No, Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deyesh. That's the most famous boomerang. But you also know with Rav Ruderman, remember? He wouldn't let Rav Ruderman know his father died, even though he had to say Kaddish. He censored the letters, better he should sit and learn and go through Shas. That'll be the biggest cover to his father's memory. Rebbe, this was the Alta. The Alta was a master mechanech. I bowed to him. He knew what he was doing. I personally couldn't do it, but I'm far from a master mechanech, although I have been teaching Torah for 55 years, with some success, limited success, but part of the failures are not just mine. It's the era of the times. It's very frightening. Very frightening. But that's a different story. That's for the press conference. Now, Reb Aaron, when he found out the letters were being censored from his elder Shvesta Malkala, his elder sister, he said, "Talk to my elder sister Malka." He was ready to leave Slabatka. It could be he was already on the trolley that was going to take him to the train to take him to Slabatka, and Reb Reuven Grzybowski. Excuse me?
To Moscow.
To Moscow, excuse me. What did I say? To go to where? What did I say? Oh, Slabatka, sorry. From Slabatka to Moscow. I got confused. Okay, I wanted to see if you're awake. It's okay. The Rebbe, whenever he made a mistake like that. Kiddush, Havdalah, Lulav, Etrog, Kvilzenis, Menochvah. He wanted to see if the audience still awake. So thank you. So when Reb Aaron got on the trolley car, whatever the means of transportation was, to go to Moscow, Reb Reuven Grzybowski, who was later to be Reb Baruch Ben Leibovich's son-in-law, a Slabatka Gadol, he convinced Reb Aaron, "You're angry, don't throw away Yiddishkeit. Come back to the yeshiva, you'll be destroyed. Your Yiddishkeit will be destroyed in Moscow." And Reb Aaron went back. And this is the tshuva of Reb Baruch Ben. So now I ask you very simply, can you understand why there's such animosity to why you? Why there's such a chasm? We're dealing here with two different worlds. The why you I went to? I write about this in Washington, but it's absolutely, if someone tells me, my poor doctor told me he read volume one of my two volumes on the Rebbe, I said to my doctor, I have chutzpah, I said, "David, you don't read my writings, you study them. Gotta understand what I'm writing." So I tell a simple story about Lakewood, how I bought a New York Times on Friday morning and put it aside to read in the afternoon. We had no studying. You walk, you do whatever you want, Friday, Erev Shabbos. And I came back to my dorm room and the New York Times is ripped up and in the garbage. Some kind of, like, how do you dare read the New York Times, people pay or whatever. And I say about the Rav, in the Rav I found a Rebbe who knew Kol HaTorah Kula and read the New York Times. It was a find, the Rav. I tell a story in Washington. I'm not telling you wave me P8. I'm even better than Reb Baruch Ben Leibovich telling on Reb Chaim Isaac Brzezinski, wave me P8. I tell the story with Chaim Gold, my chaver, my shushpin, the fellow who took me to chuppah, the fellow who made all the announcements, Rav Zev Gold's grandson, Rav Moshe Gold's son, Chaim Gold, should live and be well. He's had a hard life. He's a Rebbe in Manhattan Day School. He's had a hard life. His wife died young and he never was able to get over it. His wife's brother would be in class, but he hurt himself and broke a ligament, whatever. You know, it's Rabbi Reuben's sister was married to Rabbi Chaim Gold. Breaks my heart whenever I think of Carrot Top Sarah. Died very young. So Chaim Gold comes back to America when his father dies. Died young. Rabbi Meisha Gold was Rabbi of Englewood. Rabbi Zeb Gold's son. Rav Zeb Gold, who's speaking at 1943 with Henry Wallace when he presents the petition. There's a little bit of a movie on the magnificent websites that exist today. That's Rabbi Zeb Gold reading the document in English with Rav Lazer Silva looking over his shoulder. I can tell you more people there. If we look at the movie together, I'll point out more of them. Rabbi Yisrael Rosenberg. So Rabbi Dovaya Cohen Leventhal. So his second year in Yeshiva College, I see Chaim has not gone up to college. I say to Chaim, what's with you? What, we got college? Oh, I'm not going to college with Jens. He's going to sit and learn. So I was a busybody. So I go to the Rav and I say, "Rebbe, I got to tell you, Chaim Gold is not going to college this year." I said, "What? Bring him to me immediately." I go into the Beis Medrash. "Chaim, Rebbe wants to see you." Word by word what happened. Ear witness. Bring in Chaim. I walk in, you know, I'm a busybody. And I was, you know, I can't say I was a good friend of the Rebbe yet. That comes later. But I wasn't so afraid of him. I could talk with him. broke through the first level. No, I'm not on the third level yet. The third level comes later, which is true. I did achieve a different level, but not yet. The Rav says, "Bechayim, what's this I hear? And he told me you're not going to college. Rebbe, you know, maybe the tikkufi, we'll learn again. Chaim, listen to me. You have no, in English the Rebbe's talking, you have no father. Your father is dead. Chazal already say, quoted the Gemara, Baba Patra, Beidin Abiyin Shel Yitzayim. I'm responsible for you. Ein Zach Kenechak Sagan. One thing I can tell you, I don't know, Kveis Nishkinoi, I'm not sure what Chazal meant when they said, Yafet Kal Metorim Derech Eretz. But one thing I can tell you, Chaim, Bizman Hazeh, Derech Eretz means college. Go upstairs and register immediately. And he says to the Rebbe, but Rebbe, it's late, like that. You go upstairs. You go with the fourth floor. This is the first floor, right? Fourth floor. The Rebbe says to me, Ani, come with me to Rabbi Belkin's office, Dr. Belkin, the first floor, quickly. Mrs. Atlas greets the Rav. Rabbi Soloveitchik, what can I do for you? Dr. Belkin's secretary. He says, can I have a telephone? Who do I need? He says to me. I said, Rebbe, you need Professor Silverman. Mara Silverman was the registrar. Professor Silverman, this is Joseph Soloveitchik speaking. I want to ask you a small favor. A boy will come to you named Chaim Gold. Please help him wherever you can. And the Rav, okay, that's it. About 40 minutes later, I'm sitting in the basement as Chaim comes down. And I said, no, what happened? He said, oh, it was unbelievable. I got into every course, even those that were filled. All late fees were waived. And you know, it's funny. Professor Silverman said to me at the end, Chaim, please don't forget to tell Rabbi Soloveitchik what I did for you. You follow? I said, well, what is there? I said, Chaim, it's all right. You tell the Rav that Silverman helped you and he sends regards and Rebbe will understand. But remember, this is the Rav. This is Chaim Gold. This is the Einigel of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. Go back to that tshuva. You can see where the enmity starts. Okay. Let me go one step further now. This is a tshuva by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Now, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was a very fascinating individual. First of all, he already was, they say, the Talmud Mufak of the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Chanan was very close to the Chafetz Chaim. That there are no two ways about. Rabbi Chanan was the Rosh Yeshiva of Branovich, which was more of a sort of between a high school and a college than the final yeshiva. In other words, from Branovich, many times you went on to Slabatka, you went on to Telz. What else did you say?
Kletsk.
Yeah, you went on to the yeshivas that were considered on a higher level. There were Talmidim who were very close to Rabbi Chanan, who remained with him personally for many years. Rabbi Chanan was, I would use the word conservative with a small c, of all the Rashi Yeshiva. He booked no compromise with modernity. And I can give you the classic example. The greatest Rosh Yeshiva, the most famous Rosh Yeshiva who taught for 60 years was Reb Shimon Shkop. Reb Shimon Shkop had a long and illustrious career beginning in Telz, and then he was in the rabbinate, and wherever he went he organized the yeshiva, and finally he organized what would become a very well-known yeshiva in Grodno. Shiva Sharei Torah of Grodno, where he was Shtuk Rav. That's how Rav Shimon Shtuk winds up in America. He was a Rebbe in what today is YU for a famous year, which no one can deny because there are pictures of Rav Shimon sitting with Rabbi Revel and other Rashi Yeshiva in front of the dedication of the new building on 186th and Amsterdam Avenue. So Rav Shimon, why did he wind up in America for that year? And he would have stayed in America because he had to raise funds for Grodno. But he was so, Rav Shimon was very broad, very open. He was very happy in America. And again, you'll read 101 variations, depending upon whether you're reading scholarship or whether you're reading Oxford literature, why Rav Shimon went back to Europe. The answer is very simple. Rav Shimon, this I researched and I spoke with Rabbi Belk and I spoke with people who had no axe to grind. Rav Shimon went back to Europe because Grodno was falling apart. His son-in-law and son whom he left in charge of the yeshiva were not Rav Shimon. And students, Pashut, it's like today, you go to hotels in Cleveland, there's basically a very small yeshiva left. Because there's no Rosh Yeshiva statue to attract. Skokie, they tell me, just was taken over by Turo. Turo brought out Skokie. And they tell me Skokie was falling apart, lack of students. A Rebbe makes a yeshiva. So the Chofetz Chaim and the Chaim Moshe Grishinsky ordered Reb Shimon Shtup back to Europe. If I'm ordered is too strong a word, they could jolt him, come back, or the yeshiva will fall apart. And I know this from Eitat Nemana, who saw their letters, and I saw the letters from Reb Shimon to Rabbi Revel, and this is the truth. But Grodno had terrible funding problems. So in the mid-30s, Reb Shimon celebrated 50 years of teaching Torah. I believe it was 35, 36. So they came up with the idea to issue a festive journal in honor of Reb Shimon. Sefer HaYovel, in my office I have a Xerox copy of it. Sefer HaYovel L'Reb Shimon HaKohen Kuk. And the idea was that this festive journal would be sold all over the world and raise money for Grodno. All the great Rabbanim, all the Litvishu Rabbanim, all the Rosh Yeshiva contributed. Rabbi Hanan Wasserman refused to contribute. He said, Mir Mishkechet from Azar Seifa, Azar Buch. We have no tradition for it. We never heard of it. You understand? 50 years of teaching Torah, you make a party? Never heard of it. No tradition. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. You follow? It's a perfect example. Is there anything wrong? A fundraiser? But it's the most conservative. You have to bear that in mind. But it's fascinating. His tshuva, which has been quoted and requoted and reprinted many times, was not as extreme as Reb Baruch Ben. I just will introduce it, we'll do it next week, but what I'm about to say now is very important because this is the result of research by yours truly, and I've reached a conclusion which I think is irrefutable. This tshuva reads, give you the introduction. Tshuva l'shoel mi medina yadua. Vic, who is he talking about? Write in, Aaron Rakefitz, 99% educated guess after much scholarship. Remember, I'm trying to recreate the past. People ask me, what's going to happen? We call it a Torah. I say, dummy, I have enough trouble predicting the past and you want me to predict the future. Follow? But this is scholarship. Fill in Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich of Torah Vidas. Medina Yadua, good old Brooklyn where we first met, USA. Okay? Now, what are we talking about? What we're talking about is very simple. America in the 1930s, 99% of Jewish parents who given blibben from a yidden who remained from Jews in America wanted their kids to go to college to have panasa. No one wants to be poor. You see what's happening in Israel with all the opposition of the Rosh Yeshiva, the Hasidic Rebbein. And by the way, I'm convinced that I can't believe that these Hasidic Rebbein who went to America, I believe they went to demonstrate against the Israeli government for not observing halacha, not listening to the Gemara, not listening to the Rambam and Hilchot Malachim. They want all Mechalalei Shabbos kicked out of the army.
That's why I think they're demonstrating. Mihayishayarei barach levav. Charlie, did you ever talk between Yishtabach to Yotza'ah? Out of the army. Raketa, did you ever talk between Shaliat to Shel Rosh? I don't know, I probably did. It happens. Someone walks into shul and, hey, Ani, how you doing? Did you forget what? Out of the army. Mahalo Shabbos. It's the only reason I can understand that they're demonstrating. I can't believe they're Reformed Jews and desecrate Sukkis and Sota and the Rambam Perek Zion. I can't believe it. Anyway, most parents you see in Israel going to Machon Lev. I davened Mincha Machon Lev yesterday. Davening Mincha with me with Kippat Srugat. Black Kippat. Black hats. Gera Hasidim in full Gera Gav. Soldiers from Nachal Haredi. You see, something has happened here. People know they have to make a living. You can't just sit and learn. Who's going to support Kanai and Hara? We're going to have 500,000 kids sitting and learning within 10 years. Beautiful. But you got to, at a certain point, be practical. Gedoli Israel will emerge, but the average person is not going to be a Gadol. Give him a chance. And Gedoli Israel will have to be Gedoli Israel. I have to know what's going on in the world. When Moshe Rabbeinu disappears, the people sin. You have to be one of the people. And believe me, knowledge and knowing what's going on is very helpful. To Paskin a Shaila, to be a Dayan, to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be a Machanech. I attended a art show in the Haredi world on Thursday night. I have two grandchildren exhibiting there. Beautiful. I met Pupke Karnon. It was historic for me to meet him. I was overwhelmed to meet this little Jew with a long beard and black clothes. I gave Divrei Torah Friday night. A great part of my family was together. I gave Divrei. I wish I would have time to do it now. But Pupik Arnon, when he was Chozer B'Tshuva with Uri Zohar, this great artist, the country went crazy. And they made speeches, the head of it, this is all in the, he's one of the patrons and others, all Haredim. They spoke of God gave you a talent, you have to use it. Some people are artists, some people can write music, some people can be good doctors, some people can be good accountants, some people can organize stores, that there's no end. We have to build a country, Mitzvah Jesus Haaretz. Truth is, we should be exempt from putting on tefillin when we're busy as accountants, doctors, lawyers. Now who asked the Shaila? The Shaila is more important than the answer. The Chatam Seifa. Look into Sukkah, in the Sugya of a Chatan, being Patur from Sukkah, I'll say from Mitzvah, Patur in a Mitzvah. Look into the Chatam Seifa. Look into Rabbi Avadya when he discusses this question, whether you're allowed to go on Aliyah against the will of your parents. So you see, people, they want the kids to go to college. Now Rabbi Revel opened the college. There was tremendous pressure on Torah V'Das. Mr. Mendelevich, the principal, opened a college. Why should our kids suffer? Yeshiva college is great. The kids under one roof. Have a yeshiva, have a college, have davening, have frumkeit, have a panosa, have everything. Open a college. Mr. Mendelevich was not like Rabbi Revel. My cousin Rabbi Revel felt America's America. He's not going to write to Europeish Rabbanim. The Rabbanim in America, we will decide, we will do. The Mechita, the Mechita was very broad. Rav Shimon Shkop, there was never any opposition. Adarab, just the opposite. But Mr. Mendelevich, who insisted on being called Mr. Mendelevich, is also a broad individual, but with limits. So he wrote to Reb Elchanan, and this Shubha, and it may be another reason, that if he says no to college, the parents will eat him up alive. But if he shows a letter from Reb Elchanan, it will have more effect. And this Shubha, in my humble opinion, is to Mr. Mendelevich of Torah V'Das. It probably was written, it has no date, it was probably written a year or two after Yeshiva College opened during the Depression, when parents from Brooklyn were yelling and shouting and climbing on the walls, we want, not Mashiach now, but we want a college too. And let me end off, the first one to enlighten me on this tshuva, who was written to, was my colleague at YU in teaching. He was a Torah Vadas boy. He was Rabbi Gedalia Shor's brother-in-law. Who am I talking about? Rabbi Louis Isby, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And Louis, Rabbi Louis Isby, Louis said to me, we in Torah Vadas have a tradition. This was written to Mr. Mendelovich. And I've now seen it in print by others. So I'm 99% certain, because he tells you it's being written to someone in a Medina Yedua. What is he talking about? It can't be Israel at the time. It has to be the United States. And it all fits together when we'll see the tshuva next week. But one thing you see, the chasm is developing. It's not like Yeshiva and Yeshiva College in the 20s and the 30s. There's no much like it. All right, there may be some criticism, low-key. It's not like when Rabbi Revel dies, Torah Vadas goes into mourning. I showed the class years ago, the Magdar De'Evel that Torah Vadas published about Rabbi Revel. Wow. It's a different world developing. A world in which we live, and I would say suffer from, until this very moment. Today we spent 90% of the time on Reb Baruch Berlevovich, the most famous part of the tshuva, the two boys in World War I. I introduced Reb Elchanan, we'll leave it for next week. Sunday's class, this coming Sunday, wow, Reb Moshe Feinstein, and why he is lightly opposed to an Erev in Manhattan, the critiques of Reb Moshe, and we sail into Brooklyn, where he is greatly opposed. And next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, I introduced you to a book that was put in the Chayrim, taken out of the marketplace, the Maneli Igeret. I'll give you a little bit of the background. And what I'm going to quote from the Maneli Igeret, as much as I love Reb Moshe, but I have to admit, the Maneli Igeret raises a very delicate problem. And I have to show you that Rav Avadya and Ungarische Posek would not go like Reb Moshe, but Reb Moshe's a Litvak, and they go their own world. Their mind wins out. And under the surface, Reb Aaron Cutler, and the Eidut Nemana of Vic Snow's family. Wow. Gentlemen, the freebies, I have so many, it's unbelievable. This has become a collector's item. If anyone wants it, it is yours. This is Rava Amital, and what I quoted yesterday in class, if you want the source of why he didn't want people to be machmir and live with one halacha, it's a very interesting source. Anyone who's a graduate of Yeshivat Haretzion, this is the Daf Kesha. I referred to it yesterday with the Hasidic inclination, but that's at the end. It has different Torah from Reb Aaron in it. It's a very nice issue. This is what a lot of people have asked me. Rabbi Broid was cleared of misconduct by Emory University. Okay, so the article gives you a lot of interesting details. Baruch Hashem, he's a big Talmud Chacham, but he's a genius, and geniuses have idiosyncrasies. But you gotta be very careful. In scholarship, you have to be absolutely honest. The more honest you are, the better the scholar you are. When you allow your own feelings to circumvent pure scholarship, you're getting into a very troubled time. Rabbi Dov Lipman, their Nebuch, he's under attack. He's defending himself, the army, the draft of the Haredim. Oh, Rabbi Chaim Kanevsky, if you follow this, he has solved all problems of the self-inflicted man-made aguna, because he claims that whenever a witness is among, it has an iPhone or something like that, he's not a good witness. The wedding is invalid. You need a new kedushin, a new get, if that's the case. Anyone who got married in America has an iPhone, looks at television, has a computer in his house, parcel them out. There was never a marriage. She doesn't need a get. The New York police are incensed that Satma demonstrated Christmas week when they're so busy protecting the shoppers and the Kanglan, whatever it is, falling down New Year's Eve, and they have to demonstrate. Fascinating. Oh, this is a very interesting article. Why kids go off the path. It tells you from Lakewood about fruit and vegetables, what you can eat, what you can't eat. So, of course, is there any wonder that so many kids raised in Haredi homes go off the path? By the way, there's a lot of truth to this. It's frightening to me. There's Kumris here that are against Halacha, lo nitna Torah l'malachei shari. But okay, I've said it 1,000 times over, I say it again. Anyone interested in Menachem Begin? Daniel Gord is very insightful, a whole article on Menachem Begin. Here is against the Haramim, against Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Nathan Kamenetsky, and now it seems Rabbi Yitzchak Adlerstein had a blog where he was a little open-minded, and he already has been put in the Haram. Anyone who has a sense of humor, Mesechet Chaga, Tipshit Yisrael, this is Purim Torah. Why it's going around now, I don't know. But it deals with Christmas. If you have a good sense of humor and know modern Hebrew, enjoy. Whoever put that out is genius. This is laughable. There's a street in a frum neighborhood in Yerushalayim called Rehov Orbach. Everyone thinks it's named after the professor Chaim Elimelech Orbach. How can that be? He was enlightened. He was a rabbi doctor. And it turns out it's named totally after a different Orbach, but no one pays attention. Rabbi Bleich put out a new book on the growth of Orthodox non-Orthodoxy. He's dealing with the contemporary problems. He's a very capable scholar, worth reading. And then it abused the, there's more here on the problems we have. This is the Sparim blog. I have to thank Chaim Meiselman. A lot of this he sent me. Very fascinating. Here you have, among other things, Psak, Sfadim, Ashkenazim, letters in the handwriting of Rabbi Vadya, his sons, and the ultimate decision is that could very well be that at one point in time the Yosef family felt that a Ashkenazi can convert to becoming a Svadi. Malin Bekodesh, the Eimo written. Here's a fascinating article on a woman who wrote about the Shidduch system in America and all the problems, and she finally got married. What I find more interesting are all the bloggers who blog in, half of them resent her, tell her, oh, give her a mazel tov, and be happy she can get married. Very interesting article, can Smicha be renewed? They sent it to me because they thought they were teaching me something new about Rabbi Revel. I wrote back that what they're quoting from Rabbi Revel, I give them the exact page in Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy, where I quote exactly the same thing. That's a very timely article because the Chag HaSmicha is coming up. And here is Rabbi Yosef Kanevsky, my Talmud from this very Kollel, defending a partnership minyanim. Live and let live. And it's frightening to me that this has become a way of life in the so-called modern Orthodox world. Finally, disappeared in the New York Times, I understand, an article about the poverty in Israel. And the article says what I've said all along, that there is no real poverty here among Jews. The Haredim show up with a lot of poverty because they choose to live that way. But the kids are well taken care of. And you got to understand, there's a lot of black money circulating in Israel. When is the last time you got a receipt from a plumber? I use a plumber who's a Yiddish tzaddik. He gives me a receipt on every shekel I give him. But he's a unique guy. He was raised in Kibbutz Adati. He has different values. When's the last time? There's a lot of black money circulating under the table. The Haredi world, yeshiva fellas with odd jobs, they learn in a kollel, and Baruch Hashem, the kids eat more at a kiddush on Shabbos morning than some of us eat all week. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.